Everyone, and welcome to minute 137 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Thank you for having me back on and for this spectacular film.
Well, I didn't make the film. That, you know, we already discussed that yesterday, that Steven Spielberg is responsible for that. You know, any complaints and any applause and complaints go to him. I just talked about
what complaints with this movie? If there's a complaint jar for this movie, I would like to talk to the people who are putting complaints in it. I will hold you all accountable.
No, there are
criticisms are different than complaints.
That's what I was going to say. There are a few criticisms, but complaints, you're right. I will agree with you on that. You know, that would be harsh to call it a complaint as opposed to a criticism. You're right.
Hence my hostility. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Exactly. So minute 137 begins with Miller saving Ryan. And ends with the Germans bringing out a big gun.
Yeah.
So yesterday we not just figuratively, but literally saw Miller actually reaching out to save Private Ryan. And this minute begins with him following through on that. And, you know, his arm was extended yesterday. And today we see what he's doing. He then pushes Ryan back into this little crater that they've been hiding in, you know, and you can see that Ryan is a little upset about this. You know, he wants to be in the middle of this fight.
Oh yeah,
he's not happy that the decision has been made that you know, we're going to let you fight, but we're not going to let you always fight.
Well, yeah, instinctually too. That aside from the fact that he's clearly a soldier through and through. He's been in it for a while now.
Correct.
And he also finds out he's lost his brothers. I mean, I understand where he's coming from on this. And also, I understand Miller and the team because of everything they've been through to get to him in order to get him home safe. All the sacrifices that have been made up to this point. And both sides of the coin have really, really human motivations, but at the same time you also want him to go home because you don't want everything we've watched all of this movie up to this point and all the sacrifice that we've had up to this point to be for nothing. And there's no way of knowing whether or not he is or isn't going to survive, but I don't even think that that's like the most intense part of this, watching what the choices they make in order to get there.
Right. Yeah, the those choices, that's what's amazing to watch, you know. To see that throughout this entire scenario, you know, the way that Miller decides what he's doing and when he's doing and all that stuff, it's just great because it tells you so much about the way a commander makes decisions.
Yep. And the weight that they have to carry.
That's right. That's right. That sometimes, you know, the decisions that one needs to make, you know, in a command position, they're not always simple ones.
No. And also, you know, what I like about this, too, is if we were watching a regular movie, we would be seeing probably Miller and we would be seeing Ryan having like big hero moments together. Like they would be running around and kicking all the bad guys' butts. They would have these like super cinematic moments where we would cheat death a couple times here or there. And that's not even close to the spectrum of what's happening here. And it's as simple as like you said, when he just kind of shoves him back down without his consent, like, nope, you're not doing this part. That is so different from what we are accustomed to seeing. And it's what sets it apart from other movies that are in this genre, amongst other things.
Well, because again, it's showing the selflessness.
Yeah.
Of these characters, they're there to save Ryan. It doesn't matter right now. They're anything else. They don't care about their own lives.
No, they're all there, ready to sacrifice every single one of them. And They were anyway, but this is their mission. This is what they're here for. And like you said, they're all willing to do it. And there's something about that that gets me in my gut. So watching every little sequence here, knowing that they're all doing exactly that, that's what cuts me up, I think.
Right. Okay, that's completely understandable.
The selflessness. Yeah, it's real. That's real hero shit right there, though. I forgot if I can swear on here or not. If not, that's real hero crap.
You can say both.
Crap shit.
The truth is, I actually thought you said hero ship. You know, I actually thought that's what you said, you know, which also would make sense.
Also, yes.
You know, what went through my mind right after you said it was, do I need to beep that or not? And I was like, I don't know. You know, I'll have to listen to that one back and forth to see what Heather actually said. But now you've let the cat out of the bag.
Yes. Me and my potty mouth. I try.
That's okay. And, you know, we there are no complaints about your potty mouth.
At least here.
Correct. That is very correct. Why, on other podcasts, they get upset at you about that?
No, everybody kind of lets me do whatever I want, usually. No. But, which I appreciate.
Nobody messes with
Heather. Yeah, but I try to be mindful of where I'm at. I try to, because I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, again, here it doesn't matter either way.
Well,
so, right. So basically, Ryan is a little upset that he's been pushed out of the way, you know, and he starts crawling back up, get out of this little crater, and then Miller just takes off and starts running towards the, you know, this burning half track. And you see, like, one of the stuntmen, you know, run by completely on fire.
Yeah.
and then they actually give us a bird's eye view shot from, you know, from Jackson. And we see Miller just walks over to these guys that are burning and just shoots them.
Yeah. And that's – and it's another thing, yeah, too. Like, and it's throughout the whole movie. But here, I think, is where we see it at its most – parent is, we were talking about friendly fire and whatnot earlier, but it's also, I don't want to say callous, that's not the word I'm looking for, an indifference to taking another life, because there is no time to think. They have to just, it's either them or them. So normally in film, we see these characters come, either they have to contemplate the lives that they're taking, or the opposite, where it's just gratuitous violence and we don't think about the people that they're killing. In this circumstance, it's not, there's not the sound again, I think, comes in too, because you don't hear the big booms and there's not all this extra distraction. It's a clip, clip real fast with the guns and then the body just drops. It's, yeah, so it's,
that's right.
There's something about it that's startling because it's too close to reality instead of the over embellished, you know, stuff we see for entertainment usually, and yeah, right. But it is, there's just an indifference. It's a boom, boom, and then you move on. And it's the same thing when we go back to Jackson, and he's up in his little perch.
That's right. I keep calling where he's up there is
clock tower.
He's in the clock tower.
Yeah.
Save the clock tower.
Oh yeah, he's there now.
And then we get a shot of Ryben. You know, also shooting guys on the side. And then we see the tank start moving a little bit, and Ryben gets a little concerned and sees that, you know, the tank is actually moving in the direction of where, yeah, Ryan is. And then Ryben, you know, stops what he's doing and runs over and basically just grabs Ryan and pulls him out of the way as the side of this building just explodes. And once again, they're showing us that even Ryben, who is the one who's griping the most out of everybody, he still, you know, knows that this is his mission. He needs to make sure, he needs to keep Ryan safe, yep, as much as possible. You know, he's finally come
around
to it.
He understands it, whether he agrees, you know, with it or not. But he's, like you said, he shows up and he does it. I think, too, that shot, the first shot of him there, where the turret is panning, that is terrifying. Because you're looking at the butt of it, and it's just aimed right at you as a viewer, and it's moving slow back and forth. It's death in your face, essentially. And it's a reminder that that's what they're looking at, and that's what's aiming at them. And then when you pan back out to Ryan and you see it further away in the background there, you're like, it's that close. So if it fires, they're done.
Right.
There is no take back. There is no, oh, we just dove out of the way and all we have is debris. They're done.
So I like the way that they do that. And then you know, as the side of the building explodes and we see all the debris and the dust and everything happen there. So we see that Upham was just sitting on the side.
Yep.
You know, which tells us once again so much about Upham. He's still crapping in his pants. You know, he does not want to be there.
He's doing.
You know, some of these other characters want to be there because they want to be in the fight. They want to do something. He doesn't want to be in this fight.
No, and that's the thing.
You know, if it was up to him, he'd be far away.
You make a really good point. And it's the characters that I typically really enjoy the most when I'm watching movies is your everyday character that doesn't have any superpowers or anything particularly special about them. But when they're put in extraordinary circumstances, they rise to the occasion. But he is the example of the opposite of that, where we have an everyday person who's put in extraordinary circumstances and they don't. All right. But he's the guy in the story who doesn't live up to what everybody else around him is doing.
Correct.
And we see the consequences of that.
Yes. That we will see later in this movie for sure.
Yep.
No question about that. Yeah.
Which is why it's so insufferable to kind of go through it and see that from his point of view. But it's such an important character to have in the story too, for so many reasons.
There's no question about it. It's giving another voice to everything that's going on. I mean, one of the things we've talked about numerous times is that each of these characters gives a very different voice to the everything that's going on. Yes. Obviously, they use the stereotypical ethnicities of the different characters sort of as a joke here. You know, where they're just putting them all together, like in many war movies, they do that. You know, you have the Italian, and you have the Jew, and you have the Irish guy, and you have all the little different things that you add in there. Here they use it more as a punchline with that, but we still see the different perspectives of each of them in everything that's going on, which is just great to actually see. And Upham fits into that.
Because it reminds you that they're not all just drones. They're not just, you know, throwaway characters. All of their lives matter. Even if you don't like them, all of their lives matter. They're still all people. Right. And I think
against everything that everyone talked about up until then about the greatest generation. You know, everyone was saying everyone was gung-ho. Everyone wanted to be there. Everyone, you know. Here they're showing us something a little different. You know, it wasn't just that everyone wants to be these heroes doing their duty for God and country. You know, here it's giving us something more personal about each of them, which I think is one of the reasons why this movie resonated so much with those that were still alive at the point when this movie came out. You know, from that, you know, that fought there, that. It was so realistic for them that it brought them back to those days. In some ways, that was beneficial to them, and in other ways, not. You know, I heard stories of veterans that walked out because it was just too intense. It reminded them too much of everything. And then on the other hand, there were others that it opened them up to start telling the stories. You know, to pass on the anecdotes and everything they knew about what was going on.
Yeah. That's the thing too. Everybody, and it's a really, really great point that so many different personalities and experiences are represented here too. And for that reason, like my papa, on my dad's side, he served in the Korean War, and I know it was really bad. I have, if you're interested in reading a book about the Korean War, the outpost war, that has a lot to do with where my papa was and what he went through. And it was a really, really good, difficult book to read, but very good book to read. But that was something that was he never, ever talked about. He was a Detroit police officer for 25 years after that. And he would talk about things that happened. And he was an officer during the Detroit riots. So he was an officer during probably one of the worst times to be a police officer was in Detroit. And he would talk about that. But he would never talk about the Korean War. And even as kids, it got to he was getting older, much, much older at that point. And my grandma said, "You're going to sit down and tell your grandchildren the story of what happened when you were over there, so they know." And he'd never
and
talked
then he
about
sat
it
down
his
with
entire
you and
life
told you the
with
story.
Any of his family. He did. He told us a lot. Not all the details, not all the things. He was succinct with it. I think I was about 14 at the time, so my brother was probably about 12. But yeah, he did. I think we sat and talked for like a whole hour. And of course I asked questions, but I now all these years that have passed, because it's been like 30 years since then, now I can see how difficult it was for him to even talk to us about it then. So, and then you think, yeah, and then you watch something like this, and you know, again, for civilians like us, I mean, it's maybe the only way that we'll ever have any kind of ability to even see it a little bit, which I think is what makes it so amazing.
You actually just reminded me of a movie. What was the name of that movie? Memorial Day. You ever see Memorial Day from 2012?
Nope.
Okay, you should check it out.
I'm adding that to my list of things Rob says I need to watch, which is good so far.
That's right. It's a movie about a veteran from Iraq, who basically was inspired by his grandfather, who was a soldier during World War II. And the movie basically shows flashbacks from when he was 13. He found like a Foot Locker of stuff that his grandfather had from World War II. And he wanted his grandfather to tell him stories. And his grandfather refused. And he finally agreed at one point that he would tell him three stories. Pick three items from the Foot Locker, and I will tell you the story of what it was.
I love that concept. And that makes me think of my papa. Oh.
That's what reminded me of it. Yeah. And the grandfather is played by James Cromwell.
Oh, that's he's so wonderful. Okay. Yep. I'm going to watch this now when I'm ready to cry. Because like I said, war movies are what does it for me.
Okay. That's fine. But, you know, and, you know, because I'm giving you these recommendations, you have to actually also tell me what you think of them afterwards.
I promise I will. You know. I'm gonna watch the Black Hawk Down one. Like, that's gonna happen soon. It's either gonna happen a little bit longer if my brother is willing to watch it with me, or that one is going to happen on my own probably within the next week. Right. I'm very excited to see that. I'll have to emotionally prepare myself for Memorial Day.
Memorial Day is one of my favorite movies from 2012. It was just so amazing. I've seen it probably like three or four times so far, and now that I'm talking about it, I want to see it again. You know, just because it's very powerful.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
All right. Let's continue talking about Saving Private Ryan. So Upham, you know, braces himself. And you see that he puts more ammo over his neck, and then, you know, that's all we see of Upham. And then we're back to Miller, who is still gung ho right now. You know, he takes his gun and puts it into one of the slots of the, you know, of the tank, and just starts shooting into it. You know, just try and get as many of them as possible. And then we see him run to the other side, you know, away from the tank, trying to figure out, I guess, where Ryan is. And then he turns around the side of the building, and he finds Ryan, and we hear, you know, he screams, "Ryan, Ryan." And then we hear Ryan scream, "Get off me."
Because he's sitting on his back.
He goes, "Are you all right?" And he goes, get off me." And we see that Ryben is sitting on him. That's right.
Yep.
And then And then Riven turns to Miller and goes, yeah, I'm fine too, Captain. Thanks.
It's a good bit of relief in the middle of all of this, and it's brief, but it's necessary.
Yes. I like the comedy of it, in the middle of everything. And but it also, once again, as we mentioned earlier, it shows another side of Ryben.
Yes. He's like, I'm here
Ryben
doing the
has
job.
his that's right. He's taking his duty to the top level.
Which,
And it's just great.
yeah, and you know, that there's a quality of character about that too. This is he like we said, this is not something he agrees with or he wants to do or thinks they should be doing, but they're there and he's like, no, I'm showing up, I'm gonna do the job, and I'm gonna have my guys' backs. Literally in this particular circumstance, but I
For
mean,
sure.
that's one of the things I think that makes him probably one of the best characters in the movie too.
I agree. And then we get another bird's eye view from Jackson, showing watching the guys on the tank, guys getting ready to climb on the tank, and then we hear in the background Miller scream, "Okay, both sides, get aboard, get a grenade in there." And we see a total of six guys climb onto onto this tank. And they just start getting ready, and one of the Germans on the inside opens the hatch. He's like coughing, and you see blood running down from his nose and everything like that. And then one of the guys just shoots him.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's very graphic,
It is.
the amount of blood that spurts out when he does that.
The chaos
But
of
again,
it
it
too, and
shows.
the oh, here we go again. But the intensity of it, there's chaos, and at the same time the urgency, and we have to do this, and trying to survive and just not die, but also be aggressive and do the, it's just there's so much going on. It's crazy.
Correct. And then one of the guys, then two of the, three of the guys, pull pins from grenades, and in unison they all scream, "Grenade!" And then they throw it inside the tank. And then one of them screams, "20 mil!" And then the camera pans really, really fast, and we see a 20 millimeter gun, being pulled up closer. By a bunch of the Germans. And then that's where it ends. We have to wait and see till tomorrow what happens with that.
Yeah.
But I also love how they show they show us Ryan watching this, and sort of feeling a little helpless about what's going on.
Yeah, because he wants to participate. He wants to be in it. He's a soldier. He's a soldier through and through. And
That's right.
they're making him stop.
Very true. A bit of a problem. At
We got to sit on his
least
back.
it's a problem. It's a problem for Ryan, but that's the way it is. And that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about in this minute?
No, I mean, I think we covered this one pretty good.
Okay, very good. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So, Heather, once again, start with your number five and work your way up.
So I was trying to do a good mix of nostalgia with my favorites, with also best performances, and I tried to do a marriage of all of those things because Tom Hanks has been in too many movies where he's great and too many movies that I just adore him in, and his range is incredible. So I started with one of my favorite performances that I actually would argue is still really a great one, and that's A League of Their Own. I love this movie, but he's wonderful in it. The women shine, absolutely, but I still quote him in that movie so regularly, it's not healthy. My number four.
Oh, it's always healthy to quote.
Yes, half of my life is quoting things. I don't have too many original thoughts. That would be silly.
Fair enough.
My number four is Saving Private Ryan. I don't have to explain why. My number three,
Really?
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, well, exactly. Yeah. I'm here, right? My number three, again, this is so hard. Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump. I love that movie. I love him in it. It's wonderful. Number two, Philadelphia, a combination of brilliant, beautiful movie and incredible performance. And my number one, I picked mostly because of his performance and the fact that I never want to watch it, but whenever it's on, I can't stop watching it. And it's Castaway. I never have any desire to watch that movie at all. It's really strange. I don't dislike it, obviously, but it's not like it ever comes into my mind of a the thought does of, oh, I would like to watch Castaway today, or I've been thinking about Castaway. None of those thoughts occur to me. But if it's on, I can't change the channel and I'm not moving unless I absolutely have to. I'm going to sit down and watch. And you can't say that unless you appreciate Tom Hanks' performance in it, because that's what it really is. It's a good movie, but it's great because
The
of him.
movie is a the movie is definitely a showcase of Tom Hanks.
Yes.
There's no question about it.
Yes.
And see, that's a movie that makes me cry every time I watch it at the end.
I totally get it. I do.
The scene at the end with him and Helen Hunt, every time, just like
I think about that more often than I probably should too. That whole idea of if someone was gone after all that time and then returned and you had moved on with your life, and then the other person, all they were trying to do was get home and get back to them, and what that would look like. Because that's the real twist of the movie. That's
Right. No, but also it was partially his love for her that brought him back.
Yeah.
And so she was his I don't know if muse is the right word for that, but she was the impetus for him
Yeah.
to do all he can to get back to her, and then he gets back to her and Chris Noth is married to her. So
Yeah. Yeah.
damn that Chris Noth.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's why I avoid it too, is because of all of those crazy thoughts and the complications of it, because you empathize with everybody. I love it when there's situations like that, and then there's no real bad guy in the story either. It's just that life works out that
Right.
way sometimes. I know some people hate watching movies like that for that exact reason, but those are the good ones to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. All right, so Heather, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find all of my stuff on the website there. You can find my books. The Prophecy Trilogy is all there and available to purchase. You can find all the podcasts that I do, and you can find all of my social media goodies on there also.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.
In my solitude, you.